So it's about 8 o'clock p.m. August 29th, 2011. And I find myself walking down Parkway Drive in Crescent City, California, near the northern edge of the state. I'm walking towards what on my map says is a golf course. We'll see what it actually is.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about...
We're in our last days, young man.
The podcast about...
The unknown.
Part one of two...
My goal today, my ambitious goal, was Portland. My reserve goal was Eugene, Oregon. I made neither of those. So it's been a slow, yet beautiful, day of hitchhiking. So I left around 11 o'clock this morning. Two other hitchhikers trying to
I recorded this on day 48 of a hitchhiking trip that I took across the country. At the time, I was tired and really ready to be home. I was walking towards this forest that, on my map, looked like a great spot to camp for the night. It was kind of a difficult day, though. I probably spent about 8 hours of it just waiting for rides. But the sunset was beautiful, and for whatever reason, the words just seemed to come out right.
In about 3 hours, I was able to get a ride a little ways out with a man, a country man. He had a couple kids and was driving out into the countryside to tell his uncle-in-law that his grandmother-in-law had died. He drops me off, goes and tells her, picks me up again, and drives me to a junction in the middle of the redwood forest out there. Pretty part of the country. Obviously.
But let's back up for a minute here.
It is July 13th. Mm-hmm. It's a Wednesday.
This is Megan, my hitchhiking partner.
I think the thing that we have to decide right now, though, is what our central question is.
Central question?
Yeah. Like, what's your question for this trip? I mean, what is your question about...
Life.
Yeah. She wanted to visit her grandmother in Montana, so we decided to take the first leg of our trip together, starting out in the sleepy college town of Bellingham, Washington, right up in the northwestern corner of Washington State. That day, I told her that I was hitchhiking because I wanted to find the American identity, to discover what we as a country are.
I've only ever experienced it like west of the Rockies, you know? So I feel like I have a pretty good grip on...
And that was a lie, or at least a partial one. At the time, I was a senior in college, and at 22 years old, I was afraid of strangers, and I knew something had to change.
Oh, yeah.
And they choose a certain look or type. Oh, Jeep. People in Jeeps are nice.
Yeah.
And fun. And like hitchhikers.
Hitchhiking seemed like the natural option. I knew that if I was serious about facing this fear, public and constant rejection would be my best friends. On the night that I left Bellingham, I was walking back to my house when this kind of new-agey friend of mine named Mike caught up with me. He said, "Hey Jeff, I really want you to have this." And he reached around his neck to pull off this necklace that he was wearing. It was a simple loop of copper wire with a twist in the middle, attached to plain cotton cords. He said, "Wear this when you travel. I mean, I don't know if you, like, believe in this sort of thing, but I think this necklace might help protect you." And so, being a skeptic, but also being someone who's not into disappointing people, I decided to put it on. I walked home and started to pack my aqua blue hiking backpack with a couple of shirts, hiking socks, my camera, my audio recorder, a small knife, and a handful of photo prints, and when I picked up my pack for the first time, it felt really heavy and awkward. I didn't realize then how much by the end of the trip this pack would actually shape to my body, become just another extension of my back, but for the time being, it felt awkward and unsettling. And then I looked at what I was leaving behind. Not just books and clothes and things, but my roommates, my friends, my year and a half long relationship. And if all went according to plan, I would also be leaving behind my crippling inhibitions. But despite all that, I felt surprisingly ready. And so there, standing in that room, I started the most surreal summer of my life. So there we were, Megan and I, standing on the first of what would become many on-ramps, holding the first of what would become many block-lettered cardboard signs. Eventually, we looked over our shoulders and saw a car with its right turn signal on pull off to the side of the road, then beckon to us. And that's how we got to Seattle. Not bad for a first ride. So after catching a few more rides that day, we slept by a river near my hometown, and the next morning, a truck driver pulled over and offered us a ride to Montana. We talked with him the whole way, except at way stations where he had me duck down, so that he wouldn't get in trouble for giving out free rides. I guess that's kind of frowned upon these days. We hopped off his truck in Missoula and stayed with some of Megan's friends for a few days. Helena was just another two rides away, and when we arrived, Megan's grandmother came and picked us up from a grocery store parking lot. The next morning, the three of us all piled into her car and then started driving south, looking for Yellowstone National Park. Along the way, we stopped by a river for a quick break, and when we looked up the side of the mountain, there was this huge cave up there. And so, in the heat of the midday sun, the three of us crawled up the side of that mountain to find this dizzyingly huge cavern, populated by wild pigeons.
This is a cave that Megan and her grandma and I climbed up to. And there's a lot of echoes and some bird calls that we're trying to capture on this recording.
They flew back and forth between the ledges and the nests, cooing each other and completely ignoring the three very hot and very tired sightseers below. About 3 million people flock to Yellowstone National Park. That works out to about 8,000 visitors a day. Yellowstone is sublime, both for its impressive and undeniable beauty, but also for the bizarre series of traffic jams that crop up all across the park. Lines of minivans with their hazards on sit on the side of the road. Their occupants can be seen huffing and puffing through a field, camera in hand, chasing down an elk or a fox or even a bison. Yellowstone is so fascinating because it brings out the primitive nature in people. Though the hunters are hunting with their long-lensed cameras and the gatherers gather little bags of carrot sticks and individually wrapped cracker snacks. It was fascinating. It was this mass of humanity where the social rules of engagement are entirely different, where no one would judge you or look at you twice for running through a field soaked in sweat, kids in tow, searching for the perfect Christmas card picture. That night, we shared a campsite with a Canadian couple and a family of mosquitoes. The next day, we visited Old Faithful, watched it erupt twice, and then Megan and her grandmother headed back to Helena. Megan would spend the rest of the week visiting her family before heading home, and I was to head eastward by myself. Just like that, the first leg of my trip was over. As I watched them drive off, a feeling of simultaneous excitement and dread filled me. It was suddenly all real, and there wasn't any turning back now. I was 1,000 miles from home and by myself, really, really by myself, for just about the first time in my life. So I went out to a nearby intersection and wrote in big block letters, E-A-S-T, on a piece of cardboard. I stood on the side of that road, doing exactly what I had set out to do and getting an uneasy feeling in my stomach at the same time. I felt naked on the side of that road, and time was dragging. As raindrops began to fall, a nice car, a Jaguar, pulled off on the shoulder. I thanked whatever gods were listening and hopped in. Vicky was on her way to the Midwest to take care of her ex-husband's aging mother. She dropped me off in the late afternoon in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. This was the first night I would ever spend outside alone, so I wanted to make it a good one. It's now Tuesday, which must be the 20th, although I'm not sure. And I'm currently halfway up Snow King Mountain, which is looks like a pretty small ski resort over here. Stumbled across an area with about 15 picnic tables, and I'm sitting on one of those right now, looking out over the city. In addition to that, there's 2 porta potties. And in addition to that, a tent. It's going to be a good night's sleep, as long as I wake up before the employees get here. Feels really good to be traveling alone, to be honest with you. And I'm sure I'll regret saying that later in the trip. I smile a lot now. You have to when you're hitchhiking. As I tried to sleep that night on the rocky ground, wind flapped the side of my tent constantly, making me think of bears and moose and other such monsters of the night, and most of all, the overall fragility of human life. A mosquito insisted upon dive-bombing my ear, and I rolled over for what seemed like the 1,000th time, and something dull poked me in the chest. Reaching under my shirt, I rearranged the necklace that Mike gave me, remembering his promise of protection, and feeling slightly comforted, I fell into a fitful, restless sleep. From the beginning, my goal was to meet strangers, to confront a fear rooted so deeply inside of me that it became debilitating. And suddenly, consciously, this was happening.
Well, I'm Pastor Truman Bauer from Kearney, Nebraska. And I met Jeff, came home from the library with my wife today, and we've been developing a friendship ever since.
Yeah. Can you think of the best sermon you've ever given?
Well, one of the best ones, and I've used it various times, but just in a little, was the story of the prodigal son. And I call him the prodigal in the pig pen. Now, a lot of people, they don't believe in a hell. And if they don't believe in a hell, they can't believe in a heaven, because Jesus in the Gospels talked more about hell than he did heaven. But I have preached messages on hell, but I never would preach it unless God really held it to me. But I never did it but what I could preach it with love, because that's a serious thing to talk about hell and being lost. But
what is hell?
The worst parts of hell, Jeff, would have been for me if I'd have never answered God's call. That memory for a year, or eternity, see. Oh, if I'd only made a decision for Christ instead of to live for myself. Again, I believe it was divine providence that put you in the library when my wife was there. That wasn't a lucky encounter. See, I lived too long and lived for the Lord too long to believe in such a thing as luck. Okay? Jesus said to go into all of the world and preach the gospel. Okay? Isn't this the world? Okay? I've tried to preach, share the gospel with you just as simply as I know how, or the simply the way I preach. But if you do this and put this on the air, isn't that getting the gospel message out some way? You may never know, you and I may never know until eternity who that reached.
I continued to push eastward, humming songs to myself along the freeway on-ramps, meeting the gaze of anyone not too proud to ignore me. As a hitchhiker, you get about 2 seconds to make a good impression. As a driver, you get about 2 seconds to make your judgment. And I found that most drivers had the same reaction to me. Blinders. Eyes dead ahead, pretending not to see me. But some met my gaze and smiled back, or looked conflicted, gesturing that they wished they could stop, but still allowing some specter to hold their right foot to the accelerator, ensuring their safety. I would think to myself, maybe it's because I'm a tall guy, or maybe it's because they've seen some episode of CSI about this, or maybe it's because they knew someone once who got killed. But every now and then someone would look at me, make direct eye contact, and just beam back, and then pop on their turn signal and pull over. It didn't seem to be an issue of age or race or wealth or religion or what have you. The people who pulled over were just people, Americans, and for the first time I was experiencing America through real Americans, just like I told Megan when we were standing, waiting for that first ride, the one where I lied to her about my intentions.
What's your question about life?
I think right now my question is a lot to do with, like, what, like, the American identity is, you know? I only have experienced it, like, west of the Rockies, you know?
The Midwest was hot and humid. Tornadoes had just destroyed Joplin, Missouri a few months prior. And summer storms cracked lightning on rainless nights, waking me up with a jolt. I kept hearing this weird bird in every city I went to, but it sounded nothing like any bird I knew, and it was really, really loud. Eventually, I asked someone about it, and they looked confused. Once they figured out that I was talking about the cicadas, they laughed at me. Eventually, I learned to sleep better outside, to recognize a good urban camping spot. I'd find nooks hidden in plain sight where I could lay out my pad and use my sleeping bag as a pillow, and close my eyes only halfway, ready to fight or flee from threats that never came. Slowly, though, the concept of fear and the concept of caution were separating out into an ever-diverging Venn diagram. The generosity was still forthcoming. A couple strangers invited me into their houses. A manager at a fast food restaurant brought me ice water on a hot day. A couple of self-defined hicks invited me over for pickle loaf sandwiches and Missouri sweet tea.
My name is Joel Carlson. I reside in Missouri, Bloomsdale, Missouri. There's some good old people out here on the ridge. You know, we got here in Missouri, it's where I'm at, it's called 550 AM. It's called Coast to Coast. I don't know if you've ever listened to it.
Of course.
But yeah, you know, they talk about how the world is destructing right now. It's wobbling. If you ever notice, when you get up in the morning, you're staying out here on the road, when you get up in the morning, what time's the sun coming up? 4:30 sometimes in there. Just a few years ago, it was 5:30. You know what I'm saying? So the Earth is moving. You know what I'm saying? It's not keeping the same track. The ozone layer's tore up. You know? We're in our last days, young man. My philosophy on it is, you can only take from the Earth so much. Coal. TIFF. Salt. You know, you can only take so much coal out of the earth, burn it up, and then it's gone. Where's it go? It goes up there and punches a hole through that ozone layer. You know what I'm saying? That's what's going on. Yeah. I think the world's just going to explode like a volcano. It's going to open up from the Maverick Fault. Going to have massive earthquakes. The Earth's going to open up, probably split off. It's just a matter of time. We're in our last days.
A truck stop employee named Emily gave me free shower tokens. When she found out I was hitchhiking, she organized an impromptu road trip with her friend named John just to get me to Tennessee. I was riding that high of generosity, but I was also struggling. It felt like a long time since I'd seen anyone I knew. Cities in the South were a little more wary of me, and I was waiting longer for each ride. I felt the brunt of this one day as I spent 8 hours in the rain trying to catch a ride out of Memphis. It was one of my oldest friends who picked me up. He knew I was nearby, so he came and scooped me. Tim and I went to preschool, middle school, and high school together in my tiny hometown. At the time, he was living just south of the Tennessee-Mississippi border, where he was teaching Spanish and coaching football at a highly impoverished school right in the heart of the Mississippi Delta. The town he lived in was rough. There wasn't much there, just a Walmart and watermelon farms and a couple of restaurants. His town literally had a wrong side of the tracks. As you crossed the railway, you could see a sudden change in the style of houses, the upkeep, the number of items in the yard. One night, we were in a restaurant, and as we were ordering, we heard... One of the guys died. As the cops showed up, I started talking to people. A large man with a soft voice told me that he was getting desensitized to all the violence in this town. People he grew up with got drunk too much, got mad too much, and had too many guns. So I took some pictures of the cop cars, and Tim and I left.
Who got shot wrong?
Nobody. I'm dancing. Y'all go back out. They got 5-0 out there.
Okay, good.
Y'all safe. Yeah. Every blue moon. Y'all okay?
This is Hussein. So can you just introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, my name is Tim Krautkramer. I'm 22 years old. I just started teaching Spanish at North Panola High School in Sardis, Mississippi.
So what do you think about the whole situation now?
This is something that does happen. A lot of the people that were with us last night that were members of the community were saying, you know, this kind of stuff happens. And, you know, I'm still not desensitized to that yet. And I didn't have enough, you know, mental time to totally digest it, but now that I'm talking about it, it is pretty frightening, you know, because I've never grown up in a situation like that. And well, my students don't live in Marks, but there are similar outbreaks of violence and fights and things like that that go on in these communities in the Mississippi Delta, and oftentimes with poverty there comes this violence. And so it's kind of like the first taste of what that actually looks like for me as a teacher who hasn't had those sorts of experiences, coming into an area where that is more ingrained or more natural or more common. So it's interesting because I had those expectations to be exposed to that, but I never knew actually what it would feel like until it was that close to me, and it really was that close to me. When you go through something like this, it's like, wow, okay, you know, I was that close to bullets hitting flesh. It puts things in perspective.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, definitely.
I decided that it was time to head home. Real home, back to Washington. I was 27 days in, and I started to feel longing in my bones. So the next morning, I thanked Tim and began a journey home that would take me 3,000 miles back across the country, meeting new people and finding old friends. catching a lot of rides and making acquaintances and being kept up at night by these goals that just 1 month prior seemed so foreign. Been listening to part one of a two-part series about a trip that I took across America in the summer of 2011. Part two is going to be all about my return journey back to Washington State, and you can look for that coming out in the next week or so. The Here Be Monsters podcast is a growing community of producers and artists and musicians and philosophers, thinkers, all people oriented towards following fears and the unknown and just about anything that's confusing or interesting. So if you like the show, just remember that the show is free to download, to share, to do whatever you want with, and it's always going to be that way, but it is not free to make. So right now, there's this really awesome symbiotic thing happening over on the Here Be Monsters website. And back in 2011, when I got back from this trip, I had a bunch of photos from the trip. And I made this photo magazine of all the wacky tourists that we saw that day at Old Faithful. The magazine looks great, it's not too expensive, and it's one of the best ways that you can help keep the show on the air. So head over to the website, hbmpodcast.com, and click on the button that says store. Again, that's hbmpodcast.com, click on the button that says store. The sounds you heard on today's show were both personal recordings and from the fine community of recordists over at www.freesound.org. Music this week from Lucky Dragons, Nim, Swamp Dog, and most of all, a very underrated producer from Portland, Oregon, who goes by the name Flower Petal Downpour, and he's just put out this new EP that I really can't get enough of right now. Be sure to check it out. I'll link it up down in the comments. The Here Be Monsters podcast is produced and edited by myself, Jeff Empman. But it's listeners like you who make this show possible, so thanks so much for listening, and tell your friends.